Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast.
I'm starting a little quieter. I've almost lost my voice for today. It was a long day of talking. It was like a 13-hour day and two podcasts today that were both super, super, super fun. And I still want to tell you about it, but I'm not gonna, because I think it's more fun to surprise you guys at the beginning of a week and be like, here's this one. So it's very rare that I give away the podcast in advance, because I don't know, it's just, it's kind of fun. It's like a little present to unwrap each week. Ugh, did I really just refer to my podcast as a present? I'm an asshole. I apologize. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to tell you who I recorded today. But I will tell you that this episode was Angela Kinsey, who plays Angela on The Office, and she is an hilarious comedy lady, and I enjoyed the shit out of having her on the show. I love having people that just come on ready to riff about stuff and will go off on any tangent, and I absolutely loved having her on, and I definitely want to get her back on. I would like to thank Audible.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. If you go to audible.com/Nerdist, you get a free audiobook download. You can listen whenever and where you want. It's just like a podcast, but rather than freeform chatter, it is their words that someone thought of in advance and then collected and whittled down and put in a specific order to create a specific emotion. But sometimes you don't have time to put your eyes on things, but you can certainly put things in your ears much more than you can put things in your eyes just throughout the course of your day. Like, for instance, this podcast is not a written transcript that I send out. You listen to it. So it's the same thing with Audible.com. There's over 100,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible has it covered. In celebration of the just-released World War Z trailer, though I don't really think Max Brooks had much to do with that. He did have a lot to do with the book. And also, he is one of the people who lends his voice to narrating the book, along with Alan Alda and John Turturro and Rob Reiner. You can get that on audible.com. So check that out, World War Z. It's a phenomenal cast of people reading an amazing book. Again, that's audible.com/Nerdist for your free audiobook download. And now, I would like to invite you to enjoy the Nerd... Oh yeah, my comedy special, Mandroid, airs Saturday, November 10th, 11 p.m., 10 Central on Comedy Central. I'm going to keep blabbing about it until it's over, and then I'll probably apologize for blabbing about it so much. But if you watch it, then I won't have to blab about it so much. See? Now I'm like your parent. What's more exciting than having to do something that feels like a chore? But I promise the special is really fun, and I've absolutely loved every bit of the process, so please watch it. If you've ever wanted to support anything on the podcast, that would be a good thing. I'll say that. And now the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 280, with Angela Kinsey.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
What are you playing with there, man?
I'm playing with my studio card and the thing that is supposed to take calls.
But it's not hooked up to anything.
Doesn't matter.
You're just hitting buttons.
Caller 8, you're the winner.
Hi, I'm clearly calling from beyond the grave. I'm a ghost because that machine's not hooked up to anything.
You get lunch with Richard Jenner. What's his name?
Richard
Bruce
Jenny?
Jenner.
Well, the Bruce. Ghost.
Bruce, yeah.
Yeah, Bruce Jenner's out there. Much different person than Richard Jenny.
same.
Bruce Jenner, how's his face
They both
face
had
looking?
Great acts.
Matt, could someone close the door? Yeah. Oh, well, he'll grab it.
I'm really bad with names, so I'll get everyone's name.
That's fine.
This chair is so low.
That doesn't matter. This doesn't count. That's Chris Hardwick.
I'd rather be doesn't count.
You'll get there someday.
So we'll have to push you really close to that microphone, or if that's possible.
Or the mic to you.
That's right.
It's like a bouncy chair.
It is like a bouncy chair. Angela Kinsey, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
What's happening?
What if that was your podcast voice? That's all you.
Hey, everybody. Oh, welcome. Then you know what happened? 10 subscribers.
Yeah. And one host, I would have left.
Yeah, a long time ago.
But you'd like kill it on Nickelodeon. Like my kid would be like, I like that guy with that voice. He's the best. And then she would make me listen to you, and then I would hate you.
Yeah, that's exactly
you,
what
you
would happen.
You and Fred would be
exactly.
Side by side.
Yep. That's how that's what I need to do for the YouTube channel.
It's speed it
the
up.
Guy yeah. who does this voice all the time. It just sounds like you've cut out like every few seconds,
yeah,
and then sped it up
like a bad cell phone call.
Yeah, exactly like a bad cell phone. Well, welcome to the podcast. It is really nice to have you on, Angela. You are a super smart, funny comedy lady.
Oh, Lord.
Seriously.
So we're already doing it. This is it. We're doing it right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Wow, I just like came from the bathroom.
We started when you were in the bathroom.
Did you really?
Yeah, I had recording
the
devices
theme music
in the bathroom.
Played, all the stings. The you know we had the previews for next week's episode.
One thing I don't know if you listen to the podcast, but yeah. we at the beginning of every episode we have a famous person peeing.
Oh, and I missed that one.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
All right.
So there's
we have some really cool people on. So I'm like
we try.
cool.
No, you're also cool. You fit the build quite nicely.
Oh, well, thanks. That's the other, right?
It's not like you're Will Wheaton or something.
That's the other.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Doesn't count.
Doesn't count.
That's how you remember his name.
Doesn't
matter.
Yes, exactly.
Oh. His name's.
Oh, it doesn't. Nice. Puns in the morning.
Did you? Come on, you're used to hanging out with comedians.
Totally, actually.
You know, mm-hmm. you know the drill.
I like it.
One person throws out a topic, and then we all try to top each other until we're disgusted and walk away.
I know why we're so like twisted. Did you see The Trip? By the way, the movie The Trip.
Oh, yeah. That's
no.
great.
Yeah.
Steve Coogan.
Steve Coogan.
Oh!
Yeah.
And the other guy's like a comedian guy,
yes.
too.
Oh, gosh. What's his name? Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah. Is it Paul Hogan? Someone. I don't know. But, I just want to throw that name
actually,
out there.
There was a scene from it that got real popular online, which was just the...
them doing
the impression.
Sean Connery.
No, not Sean Connery. It was...
in the car?
It's,
Welcome to the Rock. That's
there was that one, but then there's the other one where they're at the table, and it's... I'm forgetting his name. He's the butler in the Batman movies.
What, Michael Caine?
Michael Caine. And it's just them at a table.
The butler in the Batman movies. That's
Sir Michael Caine?
Yeah.
Academy Award winner, Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Is he a sir?
Forgot his name.
By the way.
I thought about his last movie. How about that?
Doesn't matter. I like how you, tell your stories. That's not how I tell my stories. You know that guy? He played the guy at the golf cart. Who? Oh, Bill Murray.
You know the guy? Good night, you princes. That guy?
Yeah.
What is it?
Prince of Maine. Yeah. Kings of New England.
I always
Kings
think of... Yeah, I can't... Well, I didn't see The Trip. How was it?
It's great.
But it is comedians sort of just like doing their shtick all day. And you're like, oh my God, I want to die.
And it's
supposed, is that what we do?
It's supposed to be like irritating. Like they're just so like shitty towards each other. And they're just like, no, you don't do Michael Caine like this.
Right.
Michael Caine
he's
comes from
high.
The nose.
Yeah,
he's up high.
Yeah.
And it's they're going on like a foodie trip, right? That's the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good movie. It's on
Netflix.
The old Netflix instant watch.
Jonah Ray, Netflix.
People should see things that are good, I think.
Do you not have cable anymore, or did you still?
No, I got cable.
You still have cable? Yeah. Still have the cable satellite, right?
Like DirecTV.
Nice.
Yeah.
So no G4. Well, pretty soon for anyone.
Shut your face.
Sorry, man.
That's my job.
No, but they got all the good ones, like AMC.
Yeah.
You know.
I have the Hopper, and I just like to...
Hopper.
Like,
oh, that's
Dish,
but you don't get AMC.
I know.
Or another channel's gone now, too.
Really?
Off of the Dish.
Damn it.
Yeah, you know, because when you're watching it on DirecTV, it's like you'll be watching a good show.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we'll be like, Dish Network doesn't have this. Mm-hmm. And then
they're like
just
shitty commercials.
Yeah, they just is really.
They're like,
they're
like political ads.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're like political ads.
Dish Network likes to make you think that the Hopper is a good thing.
That other cable provider fisted a child. Is that what you want to support?
Whoa.
But I'm being serious for a second. I'm being serious for a second.
I know I'm being.
You're serious
real.
About that
we
happened?
We just got real.
Shit just got real.
That made me hurt on my inside.
I'm sorry. Think about the child.
Oh Lord.
Angela, you're an IO person, or you were an IO. Are you still? Do you still
do
stuff at the IO?
I did the IO West Improv Festival, comedy festival.
Nice.
Yeah, it's always a good time.
So you were you What did you have a group or did you perform?
I had many, many groups. On Sunday nights, I was part of a show called Bitch Planet.
Yeah. Now, is that bitch, comma, plan it? Or
no,
is that
no,
a planet
no,
of bitches?
It doesn't matter. Okay. No, it was a planet of bitches. We were hilarious. And then I had a bunch of Herald groups that I was in there. And I loved it. I still go back there whenever I can.
The IO is a good hang. There's like the IO West is a good place to hang out, yeah. And I rarely ever go there anymore.
It was like the first like regular like shows I would go to were when I started doing comedy were at the IO West. It's because like people hung out there with the bar.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, hey, what if our comedy theater had a place to hang out in front of it? And then you could just hang out there.
You don't have to just stand on the sidewalk. You can actually like go in and have a beer.
Yeah.
I like that about it. And I used to love like Saturday nights. I loved Beer Shark Mice.
Those guys
were so great.
Dave Koechner and Pat Finn.
I have a Koechner impression. Do you want to see?
Yes.
Okay. This is Koechner. Ready? Hey. I know it doesn't translate.
40% of it is the face, and it's really good.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, Pete Holney and Pat Finn, Mike Coleman. Those guys were amazing.
Yeah. That's a good team.
Yeah.
IO has, and I feel like a lot of comedy nerds know IO, but I think if you went to the middle of the country, you're like, hey, have you heard of Improv Olympic?
Yeah,
be like,
no, they have no idea.
But there are so many phenomenal performers that come out of the IO, which was that a direct descendant of Second City?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was Del Close, and he sort of like started to do his own thing. And Sharna Halpern paired up with him, and then they sort of built IO. But have you been there? You haven't been there lately?
Not to the LA one, no.
So I went into the LA one recently, and they have murals up over the bar now. They have like a painting of Seth Meyers and Amy Poehler.
Yeah.
And I think a local fella did it, so I'm sure he did a great job. But when I saw Seth Meyers, it was one of the scariest things I've ever seen. It was sort of like a melting face painting.
Why would they do that?
And I took a picture of it and I sent it. I sent it to Seth, and he was like, "If I live my whole life, I will never see anything that scary." But I think, I mean, the idea was cool. I was like, "But it is cool. Your face is on a wall there. That is pretty cool."
Yeah.
Chris Hardwick puts away Angela Kinsey painting. Yeah, that's dumb.
What?
That's no, I didn't know.
Oh my God, what is that?
Well, I just thought, what would you look like if you were standing on the surface of Mercury?
Yeah.
And this is what we came up with. Do you like longer form improv, or do you like improv games, or the Armando show was always a lot of fun.
Yeah, I go back and do Armando. I like long form myself. I think short form. This is super nerdy now, right?
No, that's not.
Short form is great to sort of infuse a little bit of energy, but it's not. It doesn't tell a story, and I think I like to edit fast and play slow. That's what I like to do. So I actually love awkward moments. I think that's one of the things I loved about being, you know, working on The Office, is that they let those awkward moments play out. And I love to watch that on stage. Like, when people start to feel uncomfortable, I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah, it's something about a creaking chair during that moment. It just really nails it.
And I think it's something that's just really sort of kind, too, for whoever you're on stage with. If you really just observe them and watch them and listen, and then let that inform you, rather than just jumping in with something you sort of already have in your head. To me, that's not the purest way to go.
Because you're not in the moment. You're just trying to hit a joke.
Exactly.
And it's usually a dick joke.
Yeah, it's usually that, or just like something at someone else's expense. And but when you get on stage with someone and you let long form happen, you really sort of inform each other, and then you build this piece together. And that's the coolest thing to watch. And then the audience is part of that process. And I think maybe that's why it doesn't televise so well, because you really have to be there and be present and be part of that thing that happens.
Stand-up suffers from that a little bit, but it's still, you know, you can, a televised stand-up performance can still rely on some of the jokes,
mm-hmm.
but it's so hard to shoot stand-up well, because you have to be in that. You just have to be there. It's just, it's a communal experience, like comedy. I think if you sort of look at the evolution of comedy, it didn't really evolve that way to be televised to people who aren't there.
Exactly. It's kind of, I think my favorite improv is intimate. You know, I don't like to do improv in a huge arena type setting. We did improv. We did like a workshop one time at a college, and they had microphones for us in a stadium. And I was like, well, this is going to blow.
Oh, weird.
We're going to tank. So get ready to
tank. Did it blow?
Yeah. Because we had one mic and we're passing it back and forth.
Oh,
it was so
horrible. No.
Yeah. I think everyone though needs to really have a moment where they suck in front of a huge crowd of people. Yeah, trembling. Done.
Well, it is important because for most people that's the most terrifying thing that a non life-threatening thing that a person could go through. So when you get through it and you're like, well, I guess, you know, I got through it. Then you kind of makes you a little bulletproof.
I used to do improv with this one guy. And sometimes if the audience like turned on us, you know, if there was a moment where they went, like a moan, then he would sort of like get defensive and he would sort of take it to the crowd. And I'm like, no, just them moaning is enough.
Yeah.
Let's walk away now.
You fucking assholes don't recognize comedy. Is that it?
Or he'd be like, oh, you think that is horrible and disgusting? How about this? I'm like, well, there we have.
Yeah, I once saw a guy, an audience moan, and one of the guys on stage was like, really? And then the person he was in the scene with was like, who are you talking to? That was perfect. Diffuse it. Everyone laughed, and then they moved on.
I love that. I love when you're on stage and you have to justify, or you feel the need to justify something that happens off stage too. Because I was on stage one time, and two guys got in a fist fight in the light booth of a very small, like black box theater, the complex. You know?
Of course, Santa Monica. Yeah.
Okay, so you know how tiny those theaters
are? Tiny.
50 seat theaters, and these guys get in a fight in the light booth, and it's basically like wood hanging over the stage. Rumble, rumble, thud, thud, rumble. And then someone was like, I guess the storm is a coming. Like, then we have to do really bad improv.
You motherfucker!
I know. Dang.
Oh, the gods are angry tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Cloud angry.
Did they resolve the fight?
I guess it quieted down at some point, and then no one called our light, so it was like, oh God, come on, guys. That's also the worst when you're like, what happened to the guy in the light booth? Yeah. We are done. We have wrapped it all up. We've brought it around.
Well, the fight created their own blackout. So
you hit your well done. You hit your big finish, and it's just like the light's still on.
And then the worst is like you've hit your big finish, and no one knows what to do. So someone starts a song. I'd always be like, God damn, please don't make us sing. That's like a group of improvisers. Just saying, please pull the lights. We're singing.
You just hear from the booth, oh my God, I think I killed him. And then you're still trying to do the gotta deliver this alien baby or whatever the scene is.
I was calling lights one night for Bear Shark Mice. I used to call their lights. And, you know, one night I think I called it a little too soon. And so they were like, dude, we had so much more stuff, Ange. Like, you know, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And they're like, just don't be afraid to let us go. So the next week, I really looked up to these guys, you know. And so the next week, I'm just like a student at I.O. I'm calling their lights. And I'm in the booth. And I thought I saw where their wrap-up was. But I'm like, no, I'm going to let them go. And I let it go, and I let it go. And then Dave Koechner went backstage, and someone had a spare tire in the green room. And he just got the tire, and he rolled it out on stage into the crowd. And he goes, that's our show. And then I was like, oh, my God, I'm in so much trouble.
No, then you'd be like, so then I let it go. I let it breathe, you guys.
And the audience was like, what? Whoa. Oh, I felt so bad.
Yeah, people should really understand, Beer Shark Mice were like, the Beatles of I.O. Like
of
they
improv.
Were. Yeah, I mean, they really. That was the group. Was Adrian in that group as well?
Oh, Adrian. I think, you know, they have people that rotate in. Paul Valancourt, like amazing improviser, Adrian Winter. And there'd be a few guys that rotated in, you know, based on the other dudes that were.
I mean, before. It really. I do try to encourage people because improv to me is sort of like can be like a one man show where it's where you hear it and you go, because. Most of it's not amazing, but when you see really, because a lot of people think, oh, I'm funny, I can do improv, and then it's just kind of a sloppy mess. But when you see like a finely tuned improv machine, it really is just stunning.
It is. It's so great. And for me, like some of my favorite improvisers were people who sort of came to it from a different path. Like I remember this guy, Greg, who worked at JPL, the Jet Propulsion Lab.
Of course.
Like, and I remember he was a hilarious improviser because he wasn't trying to be funny, but he would just bring information and he related to the world so differently. And I would love to watch him improvise. And I remember one time we were sitting around and he had so much science in his improv. And I am not the smartest improviser. I'm the person that I'll go to emotion. I'll be like, you're awful flirty this morning. You know, that's like how I'll start a scene. But, you know, he was so smart. And I said, what are you, a rocket scientist? And he was like, actually, I am. I'm helping design the Mars probe. And I was like, oh, damn. All right. I'm just out here trying to be funny.
Is that kind of how you see improv, is just bringing information?
No, I think you can't just have information. You do have to. I think it's really about paying attention and watching other people. And I used to be so into it that I'd be like, it was sort of like my philosophy for life, is that if you can be a good listener, you're going to be a good partner. You're going to be better at your job, better in your relationships. And that's the thing I felt like I heard. I took one Dale Close workshop, and he was just saying how really pay attention to your partner and listen. And react and go for, and then you add a little bit and then they add a little bit. So it's got to be emotion as well, and not just information, and acting off of how you feel, how the other person feels.
It's hard with the comedy, with like when the comedy gene starts trying to take over, because I think a lot of people, like for me too, like your brain freezes up a little bit when you are like, oh fuck, I got to think of something. I got to be funny. And you just have to figure out how to just let that
just
go.
Let it go. Yeah. Yeah. Don't try to be funny. That's the worst.
It's the debt. Like, it really is. You can tell when someone tries to hit a joke in an improv.
That and bad space work is real bad, too. When a guy's like, oh, just shoveling oddly. And the shovel has no form.
I think my space work's pretty crummy. But, yeah.
You know, like, when you're doing an improv and someone ends it with, and then they fisted a child. Like, that's exactly
an example. That's what we call a callback.
That's a callback. That is an example of what not to do in an improv. Is because it just basically just it you just you just drop a cement truck on the stage and no one else can go anywhere.
No, like they're done. Like, we had a guy that used to kill everybody. And I was just like walking a scene. I could tell, oh, the scene isn't going well. I'm about to get killed. Maybe I should kill him first.
It's either you or me.
Yeah.
I remember in a class once, the teacher was like, don't start, like he was saying this, like hypothetically, like, don't start on the moon, you know, lead up to the moon. Don't start there because you'll never have anywhere to go. And then like we started a scene and some kid's like, well, here we are on the moon.
No.
Like, and the kid was like, what did I just say? He's like, it's all I could think about.
Yeah, that is bad. Yeah. You like, already have something in your head.
But you, I did a little research on you, Angela Kinsey, just to find out. But your early life is fascinating to American people because you grew up in Indonesia.
I did. I moved there about a week before my second birthday, and I lived in Jakarta until I was 14.
When you say I moved there,
sounds like you did alone.
A toddler going, I'm out.
I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm good.
I had my little backpack and passport. No, my dad was a drilling engineer, and we moved there in the 70s. And there weren't a lot of expats there in the 70s, so it was a pretty small community. And I, you know, now when I talk about it, people are like, oh my God, but that's all I knew. I thought everybody lived in Indonesia.
And that was before the rest of the world hated America.
Exactly. Although towards the end, they were starting to hate us.
70s is pretty, that's a lot when the secret wars started, Chris.
But not publicly.
I do remember a few times towards the, because we were there till 84. I started pretending I was Australian when we'd go places. My best friend was from Melbourne, and I was like, I think people respond nicer to you. So
yeah.
I'm going to just be Australian.
So you understand the Indonesian language and you speak.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've forgotten a lot, but there's still a lot in my brain. And I haven't been there in a while. It's been about 15 years since I was there. But I remember being in a cab when I was there, and just like words were coming like back to me like crazy. Like there's some little secret, you know, Bahasa Indonesia folder in my head that opened up.
Wow.
But
in your Windows 3.1 file tree, just in the back, just like really old, like those old files that you enter.
Like a card catalog.
Exactly.
But yeah, so what, do you want me to say something? No.
That's kind of what I was leading up to.
I don't know. You have like this gaze about you.
Do you miss it? Like when you reminisce about home, do you like miss like the food or anything like
that? Answer in Indonesian.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so amazing.
I do really miss the food a lot.
Is there anywhere in LA that you're able to go to that match it?
No, not really. I mean, I heard there was a place in Manhattan Beach I need to check out. But like I would get so excited if I saw krupuk, which is like this little thing they put by fried rice. Nasi goreng, fried rice.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Oh, my God. Wadu. That's how they say, oh, my goodness. Wadu.
Do you think you could improvise in another language?
Oh, my God. No, I don't think so. because there's too many sort of colloquialisms. And also, I don't know how well comedy transfers across culture, because I was trying to tell a story one time. I was in France and I thought I was telling this funny story and I just got blank gazed at me.
You should have told me you were Australian.
Yeah, I should have.
Then that would have worked.
Oh, and then the monkey came out of the
tree. Oh, I like monkey.
Oh, you're so funny.
I'm actually American. Oh, you have tricked me.
No, I was just going to go really dark.
No, do it.
What?
Oh, no, no. Just a baby. Boom.
I know how I can't go darker than Fist of the Baby.
No.
That's it. That's at the bar.
I said child, Jonah.
Oh, gross. Oh, just a child? Oh,
totally man. Different
well,
than
I,
a baby.
Then I worsted it. I worsted it.
You worsted it.
Is it worse? So the baby won't remember. The child will.
Angela, please.
Even.
Oh, my God. Angela's eyes just started bleeding.
I know. I have become that person, though, now that I have a kid that, like any kind of humor.
Right.
I get weird now. I know. I used to not be that person. I'd be like, dead baby's funny,
yeah,
huh?
Greg Barron said that, too. It was like a lot changed when he had his daughters, and then it was like some shit just wasn't funny to him anymore.
Yeah, I just can't do it anymore. And yeah. Some movies that, go to some dark places, I'm like, can't think about it.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
Let me revise it. That other channel fisted an elderly man who probably sold drugs.
Woo!
See that? Then no one gets hurt.
Yeah, that makes me.
He deserves
it. I know an old man.
Oh, fuck.
Who sells drugs?
My dad's an old man that sells drugs.
He is.
No, he doesn't sell drugs, Chris. Just because you smoke pot doesn't mean you sell it.
What? So are you telling me never in your dad's life did he have some extra weed and he was like, "Hey, you can have this, but just reimburse me for the money I spent for it." You think that's never happened?
Is your dad like a hippie dude?
No, he just smokes pot.
Like a lot of pot?
Not anymore. Not really. Kicked but like, it? Used to smoke a lot of it. But apparently he's also a pusher and a dealer, according to Chris. It makes my dad seem like the worst guy ever.
The only information I have about your dad is that. Because in 2.5 years of the show, that's all you've ever said about him.
Yeah,
because
it's a nice joke. I don't like to divulge many secret things about my family. I like to keep them close
secret
to the chest.
Things.
Oh. There are a lot of secret things.
What about you? What's your dad do?
My dad works at SeaWorld.
SeaWorld, really?
So, you know.
But your dad used to fix computers.
My dad used to be a technician at Hewlett Packard, yeah. And then he decided, I'm going to go work at SeaWorld. Because that's all you can do in Florida, apparently, is work at a theme park.
What does he do at SeaWorld?
Yeah.
He's, you go up and you say you want a VIP tour. You go up to my dad and say, hey, like a VIP tour.
That is awesome.
Can you get us a VIP tour?
I can get you a VIP tour at Disney, at SeaWorld, sorry. Not
oh,
Disney.
My God. That is so cool. I would love that. And I bet he's got, you know what I love about going on those tours is how they have their own little sidebar, little
yeah,
comments. Like,
yeah,
funny thing about this Shark Tank. It had a crack in it. I went in, and he was from Italy, but anyway, long story short.
No human could get to the bottom, so they put a welding torch on a dolphin's nose.
Mm-hmm. And we all learned dolphin.
I got a VIP tour of the penguin exhibit in the SeaWorld in San Diego.
How was that?
It was great. I got to touch one.
They're stinky though, right? They're smelly dudes.
Yeah. They just like, because it just holds in all the moisture, all their, feathers.
I went into that penguin one at the Santa Barbara Zoo, which is a great zoo, but I think I have a low gag reflex, so I went in there and I was like to my daughter, Isabel, we're gonna see the penguins, and I walked in, and I was like,
because it's a lot of just fish stuff, and then they just shit everywhere, and they spray their shit.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they can just kind of.
They're stinky little.
The more you find out about penguins, the less I find them to be enjoyable.
But they're adorable.
They're so cute.
Yeah,
like
they're like the cutest animal.
So yeah. Far, what we
they
know,
only get to so far, believe me.
What we know about penguins is that they're smelly because they hold in all the stuff. They spray shit and they're rapists.
Rapists now, but that's only a Delhi penguins. That's only one specific.
The South African jackass penguin.
Yeah,
it's his favorite animal.
It's my favorite animal.
Growing up was my favorite animal too.
Yeah,
and I went to a place in Australia, this island where they have the little tiny, tiny.
Now, when you say Australia, you don't mean America, do you?
Where you're from? You said where? In South Africa?
No, Australia.
Australia.
The little fairy penguins.
Yeah.
Have you seen those little guys?
Yeah.
They're really cute.
Everything in Australia is adorable.
Everything's adorable, except for a guy.
Peter Jacks is not that adorable.
He is adorable. He really is.
Yeah, he's pretty adorable.
Is he?
Yeah. You don't think so?
He's a little gaunt.
Jacko the Energizer guy was not adorable.
Just because you don't want to fuck him doesn't mean he's not adorable.
Oh, I have a whole new meaning then.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Speaking of adorable things, Chloe and I went to Little Tokyo yesterday for the day.
Yeah.
That's true.
Nothing. We did.
Have you never been there before?
Let's go to downtown LA.
Of course I've been there, but I just haven't been there in a while.
I go.
That's great.
I go twice a week.
Angela, you've got to go. There's so much amazing Japanese culture there, and it's all adorable and huggable, but sexy.
What?
But naughty.
It's not Tokyo.
We went to different places, I think.
No,
they're not sexy, naughty, and adorable for
me. Their grocery
stores are basically giant snack huts. Like, there are so many snacks.
Oh, yeah. I love snacks.
We got green tea Kit Kats.
Ooh. Yeah, they got banana Kit Kats there, too. Those are really good.
Wow.
I instantly went home and ordered online, because Japan is way ahead of us in Kit Kat technology, but they have like sweet potato flavored Kit Kats. They have blueberry cheesecake flavored pumpkin pudding.
Sometimes they have them at the Murakai Market there.
They had the green tea ones.
Yeah, but it's not there all the time. It's like every once in a while they'll be there, and then everyone will find out about it and go buy it all out.
I should get those for Halloween. So when the little 4-year-olds in my street come up, I'm like, would you like a green tea Kit Kat?
I like going to Little Tokyo because it reminds me of Hawaii.
A little bit. Does a little bit. Oh, yeah, I guess it is kind of.
Some of the apartments, they just like, you know, everyone with their balconies with tons of shit on it. It just reminds me of where I grew up in Hawaii.
You did?
Yeah, I was born and raised there.
What does your family do?
His dad sells drugs.
My dad's
his mom silently deals with it.
Oh, right. Your dad grew drugs in Hawaii.
Yeah. No, my dad worked for like this plumbing company, and my mom just kind of had scattered jobs. But now they're retired. They live in Waikiki, and they surf and go on walks.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
They surf and go on walks.
You reminded me that I feel like on a recent podcast, we were talking about Arthur Nakane, the one-man band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was performing last night.
Oh, really?
In Little Tokyo, he set up.
Are you going to show us?
I'm going to play a little bit of it.
Is this like a...
Jonah, you like music.
Is this like stand-up and improv where we had to be there?
Because we really can't hear it that well from over here.
Yeah.
And you're looking at us with this eager face.
Yeah.
Of like, check it out.
It's like when you walk through downtown Disney and everybody's playing their like pan flutes and then there's the blues guitar guy.
Well, there were two ladies there that he came up to. Arthur Nakane is an older gentleman and he's a very high voice, so he's even more adorable. And the two ladies he talked to, one was from El Salvador and one was from Ecuador. Mm-hmm. And so he sang Spanish Eyes to them. And so just see this elderly Japanese man in Little Tokyo singing in Spanish on what looks like a plumbing supply aisle. which is how, because it's all PVC pipe and he's hooked up all these instruments so he can play once.
The best time to go to Little Tokyo is you'll see that him play there that day too. It was New Year's Day. Like it's like a whole festival and there's like just music and performances and magic and he plays a lot on those days. Yeah.
I'm going to go.
You have to. It's easy. Yeah. It's just like San Pedro Street, 2nd Street, Los Angeles Street, like this little cluster. And it's a really, there's tons of people walking around. It's been a little... Whenever an American Apparel moves in, you know, like,
oh, no. Yeah.
But beyond that, there are a lot of really cool Japanese. There's a whole kimono store.
There's a Johnny Rockets near there.
There's a Johnny Rockets.
Froyo. And like, it's just, there's a couple things where you're like, nah.
That was weird for me when I went back to Indonesia. Like I went to Bali and, you know, Bali was this very quiet little place. And now, there's the Hard Rock Cafe and Kuta Beach. Like you have to keep going further out now to sort of find what Bali was.
Where should people go in Indonesia if they want to go? Like I've never been to Indonesia.
Right.
So where should I go?
Well, I definitely feel like you should see the full picture. Like, I mean, you're going to land in Jakarta usually. Now you can fly straight into Denpasar actually in Bali. But I feel like definitely go to Bali. And I went to Jimbaran Bay, which is sort of a little sort of a fisherman's village. And, you know, now there's a Four Seasons at the end of it.
Oh.
But you don't have to stay there. You can still find little places. And then people now go to Lombok, which is the island.
But do they put little mints on your pillows in those other places?
They do. They put flowers and stuff. God. And then you feel like, there's
spa treatments in your room?
Darling.
Sometimes they fold up the towel real nice.
I like to rough it, you guys. No in-room spa treatments.
Yeah. I know. But no, Lombok, you know, people go there too. So I am so eager to go back, but I want to go back when Isabel can go with me because I really want her to see it. And I've tried to teach her some Indonesian, but I think she thinks I'm making it up. She just is like, I can do that too.
How old is she?
She's 4.
From the mouths of racist babes, you know?
I know.
Hey, what it's so interesting about, you know, like what a, just your comedy ninja-ness, it's not a word,
is that
I feel like for me, you know, 0 to 14 was a very comedy influential time.
Mm-hmm.
It's when I discovered, like, you know, all the Steve Martin records and started watching, you know, like up to 14 was very, very, very influential for me and made me want to pursue comedy. But you grew up in Indonesia, where I assume there wasn't really any American culture. And so I assume you weren't really exposed to comedy at that point. And so, you know, what was it?
Well, we didn't have television at all. And, I don't know. You know, it's I feel like my dad is a really funny guy. And one of the things we used to do is sit around and tell stories. We didn't have TV. And so, like, if you told a good story and held everyone's attention and made people laugh, that was, like, really cool. So I started, like, I think that's why I love going to see Armando and shows like ASCAT, because you have this monologist and they have no idea what they're going to talk about, and someone gives them a suggestion and then they talk about things true to their life. Like, I don't like it when people make things up. I find that your real life is so interesting and so honest. And I feel like that's what I grew up with. I kind of grew up with this sort of, you know, round table time at dinner time where everyone had to tell a story. And then even into the evenings, you know, if we went to the beach or something, we'd be sitting out there and people would tell stories or whatever from their day. And if you could make it interesting, if you could make, you know, going to the toko to get, you know, groceries with your mom interesting or tell a story, I don't know. That's kind of what really stuck with me.
That's really interesting. I mean, that... Mm-hmm. It just sounds like a storybook. Like, then we'd sit on the beach and tell stories of our day.
And yeah, it was really fun. And I don't know. I think I did get to the U.S. and I had this huge gap in sort of like just pop culture. You know, I one time I did an improv show and someone talked about the Green Hornet, and I was like, "Thank you, I'll have another." I thought it was like a cocktail. You know, I had no idea it was a superhero. So I had to use my imagination a lot, and I think that's what really sort of informed me.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true, especially in improv. You're improvising with a bunch of other, like, nerds, basically, who have this whole bank of, and there's just nothing.
There's just nothing. I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and some of your people have such an amazing knowledge of, like, television and film and music, and I sort of grew up in this vacuum. Like, I was, like, you know, Amish or something, with like no exposure to the outside world. That is my culture, you know? And then I remember, like, songs that I like that, you know, like I heard, you know, remember that song 99
Love Balloons?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So I heard was she German, right? Was it German?
German Nina. Or Austrian, Nina.
Nina. Yeah.
So I never heard the English version until I got to the U.S., you know? And I just sort of sang along. I don't speak German, but I would like...
99 Luftballons in Umbrechtum hobert Sancta Mensa Ufash aus dem
Ei. Captain Kirk.
Umschickte und Generei.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
Oh, you lost it. What was that? What was that last part?
She's saying her own name. Yeah,
so...
There was a big infusion of, like, German Austrian rock in the 80s, of like her and Falco, and, mm-hmm. and it was just like a cool, and now
Kraftwerk
and Kraftwerk, and now I was walking by a store or something, and they were blasting Gangnam Style, and I'm like, all right, now it's gonna be K-pop for the next couple of years. It's Korean pop, but yeah, that was a fun time with German.
I'm just like smiling so big because I thought that was so cool that you busted out.
No. He does too. He thinks it's real cool too.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah. I was like, wait, do I know any Indonesian songs? But all I know is like a nursery song.
What
like,
is it?
It's about a brown hat.
Oh, of course. Well, why wouldn't
it
be?
So it goes, topi saya bunda, kalo tida bunda, tida topi saya. Lakum, melihat saja.
She's looking for the hat, I think.
It's like looking. And I learned it as a kid, so I'm like, I'm not even sure 100% if that's exactly the wording, you know, because I was a little kid when I learned it.
Do you know what it translates to?
I remember being told it was about a brown hat. but I should go back and look.
What were you looking for then when you were mentioned?
I don't know.
Where did you go?
It's like how like little kids now learn like Pledge of Allegiance, and they're like, "I led the pigeons to the flag."
Yes.
You know, they have like no idea what they're saying.
I like your red and black alternating fingernails.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Cool. This is my kid. She wanted to do something Halloween-y. And so I was like...
Is that really it? Or did you just feel a little goth today?
No. Yeah. I wish I was more goth. And like, I wish sometimes that when I walked by, people were like, ooh, she is creepy. Sinister.
Coming from somebody that happens to all the time. It's not fun. It's not fun.
I think
What you have to do, because you're very fair skin, you need to dye your hair jet black.
Yeah.
And then just kind of string it in your face a little bit.
Right.
Wear an I Heart Edward button.
Maybe some blood somewhere.
Yeah, from the corner of your mouth.
What?
Is that the new goth? Is that the Twilight? I don't think that's really.
Yeah. It's tween goth. It's goth
it's
for tweens.
Goth. It's goth for the posers, am I right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
But I know goth. What?
It's basically mainstreamed. Goth culture, I think.
I don't know.
A little bit.
I did go...
Broody!
I feel like that's still Nightmare Before Christmas is the mainstream goth.
Mainstream?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I got really into Game of Thrones. Like, I'm super into it. And so last year for Halloween, I went as Khaleesi.
Of course.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I borrowed, like, a wig from our like, hair folks.
And dragons. You borrowed some dragons?
Yeah. I wish I had dragons.
You
should
just got little dragons and stuck them to your shoulders.
I walked in and, like, my friend was like, no, this isn't it. They wanted me to, like, put the blood all on my face.
Oh, from
Jesus. Yeah. But they did have my friends had a bloody like fake heart, so I carried around all night. But it was interesting, if I set it down, no one knew who I was. But if I'd lift the heart, like, otherwise I just thought I was like, people were like, "Are you a fairy?" Because I had really white hair. Yeah. You know,
were you wearing just the?
Well, here's the thing. I tried to make my own loincloth outfit, and I'm not very crafty, so I like just took like a brown skirt and cut it up raggedy. So I just look like a cave woman. Other than the wig, it was really lame.
What are you going to do it again for Halloween this year?
I don't think I can, because I think I got to do something new, right? I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you can't recycle your costume.
My daughter wants me to be Batwoman, and she wants to be Batgirl.
Oh.
That's
adorable. Just like a mom and daughter? A bat?
I know, but here's my problem. I've been looking for these costumes, and... because Lord knows I shouldn't make them. And the mom one is so sexed out. It's so hooker. It's like Batwoman prostitute. And I'm like, I don't know if I can like cruise the streets with my kid. Like, I look so trashy.
Just go as Oracle. That's Batgirl after she got shot in the spine by the Joker, and then she just rides around in a wheelchair, dresses totally normally, and just wear a headset. You're fine.
Whoa, That was some serious info right there.
I don't know.
Holy smokes.
Joker did it.
Lost me.
I think crotchless bat panties.
Batman. Yeah.
And then you could get someone to go with you as Captain Christopher Pike.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Yep. Oh my God.
What?
I have no idea.
Just beep once for.
That's an old Star Trek reference. I'm sure Indonesia got Star Trek. Everyone got Star Trek.
Here's the thing. I'm so out of loop on all that stuff. Like, I had never seen the Brady Bunch, and then I remember in college, people were like, "You haven't seen the Brady Bunch," and then like even I don't know. I have no idea about. So
have you since seen The Brady Bunch?
I did. I went. I was like, okay, I've got to watch an episode of The Brady Bunch. Everyone's like giving me a hard time.
You can't watch it later in life. It's weird.
You can't. It was so bad. You should watch it as a drinking game is how you should watch it. Responsible drinking. But I watched the one where they went to Hawaii and something had a curse on it.
You don't watch that. That's not the first one you watch.
That's the only one I've seen. That's it. It
doesn't take place in the house. It's not.
You have to watch Mom Said Don't Play Ball in the House.
Yeah, there you go.
That's Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
She gets hit in the face.
Yeah.
Oh,
I only
nose.
Know it from the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Someone should make me a list of like must-sees, and I'll just go on Nick at
night. So like a list
There's
of must-see TV?
There's too much.
Well, how about all of must-see TV? Start with all that.
You're going to want to get The Single Guy. You're going to want to get
Herman's. You're going to have to get Herman's Head.
Tuesdays.
You're going to have to get all of Married with Children. You're going to have to get Cheers, Night Court.
Cheers. Okay, Cheers and some Night Court I saw. I loved that.
Yeah, they're good.
Sam and Diane.
Yep.
Some good stuff.
Every show
mentions that.
I was literally just there yesterday. I was at the Bull and Finch Pub. Cheers.
Oh, you were in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Good chicken fingers.
Really good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard to pull off chicken fingers.
No, but they are really good for some reason. Good ones are hard to find.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I never really had ones that just weren't at a bar or something.
Yeah, no.
Well, I never go to a fine establishment and say, let me see your chicken finger
menu. You can fuck up chicken fingers because they have to, like, the breading has to be good. Yeah. And they have to not be frozen for too long.
Yeah.
Or at all.
My mom makes really good chicken fingers, and then she gave me her recipe, so you can come over and I'll make chicken
fingers.
Sounds
just like a delightful Sunday afternoon.
I'll make you chicken fingers.
You want some chicken fingers? You were...
In my butt. What? No, what? See?
Hey, what?
Hey, what? What? I just felt like I had to bring us back to fisting.
You want me to chicken finger your butt?
Ew,
I'll chicken finger your butt. All I can think of is just a chicken just curling its...
Ew. See, I don't want
that. That's not...
I don't want to visualize.
Why is it no?
It's the thing where you don't want to see where food comes from.
It's the Muppet chicken doing this?
Merk, merk, merk. Yes. This is
a Gonzo?
Bunsen Honeydew. No, it would be Beaker.
I love it.
It would be Gonzo, I guess.
He hung out with chickens.
He loves chickens.
Yeah, that was his whole thing.
Loved
Have
chickens.
You guys seen Fozzie do Deo? Deo. Is that song? Come, Mr. Tallyman?
Yeah. But I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen that either.
It's so good. It's awesome.
Is it from the old Muppet Show?
Yes.
Then maybe I have seen it. Was Harry Belafonte on that as well? Then
the
I did
only
see it.
Time I think it was the first time he'd ever sang it for for television.
Oh, you mean Fozzie?
Yeah. No, it's so good. It really holds up. I watched it with my kid and I was like cracking up.
That's awesome.
So there's too much stuff to catch up on.
I know.
But
I'm so behind.
But I feel like there are a lot of things that because you have a child, now you have an excuse to revisit a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That, by the way, that's across the board. Like, I go to the park now with her, and, like, she's like, Mom, you should do the, like, twisty slide with me. And I'm like, yeah, I should. I have a kid, and now it's okay. Yeah.
Were you someone who wanted to have kids before, or were you like, I don't know if I'm ever going to have kids. Oh, my God, it's the greatest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, I definitely was. I wasn't someone who was like, oh, I'm going to have a ton of kids, and I just thought if it came along the way, if it happened, great. And but of course now I'm like, oh my God, I love it. I love it. I love it. It's the best thing ever. And you sort of think it's everything is better when she's there. And your whole life means something more to you because you have this amazing person in your life that is you, but not you. And I don't know.
I know. Sounds like bullshit to me.
I know.
Can't you just get like a golden retriever or something?
No, we are kids.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are going to love it. Perpetually. You're going to love it. You're going to take your kid to little Tokyo. You're going to sing German. You're going to like nerd out on comic books.
Sure.
My friend, he adopted kids. And I really think the main reason he wanted kids was so he can like start like taking kids out trick-or-treating and, you know, like dressing his house up real Halloween-y and stuff like that. Like, it seems that's the most excited when he's a dad. Or it's like, it's like Halloween. And he's like, October 1st, the house is all decorated. And he's working on the costumes with his kids and stuff like that. It seems like the only reason he wanted
them. Who will be the first of the three of us to have kids? I think Jonah.
Nope.
I think Jonah.
He was really quick to say no.
No kids.
Yeah, I don't think Jonah.
No kids.
I feel like knowing my luck, me.
Your luck.
Like a curse. Like, knowing the way things roll in my life. Yeah.
Sure. Well, no, that's his way. When great things happen to him, that's how he treats it.
That is.
Yeah.
Like, I just made more money this year.
Oh my God! You've met him.
Hang in there, Jonah.
We're like giving you a hard time. But you do have to be like, I say things around my kid and I'm like, oh God, I just said that because I sort of talk to her the way I talk to you guys, minus profanity and whatnot.
Sure.
But, and then you can set up a tradition in their mind and you didn't even mean to. Like, Christmas time came around and I got one of those little, it's like a little thing you get at Target and it's got all the days on it.
Yeah,
little
an advent
doors
calendar,
open.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Advent calendar. Yeah. That would be the religious term. Sure, advent calendar. Yeah. And I was putting candies in it and Isabel would come home every day and open one up. And she turned to me and she goes, where are these candies coming from? Where are these chocolates coming from, Mom? And I said, I was deer in headlights. And I go, the Christmas fairy. And she goes, what? And I go,
oh, no.
She goes, she's a fairy? And I go, she's like an angel. And she goes, because I'm trying to get it back on, like, so my mom.
You're a master improviser, and this kid's stumping you in a scene.
She totally stumps me all the time. So I'm like, yeah,
My butt?
She comes out my butt at Christmas time.
Yeah, but when you're improvising with a bunch of drunk people at Iowa West, they don't take everything you say literally, and then that's law.
Yeah. So she said, I go, it's a Christmas angel. Yeah. And she goes, and she comes here every day to give me chocolates. And I was like, and then her friend comes over to play with us, and she goes, the Christmas angel came today and gave me a chocolate. And now I'm like, my kid sounds like a lunatic. And she was like, the Christmas angel doesn't come to my house. And Isabel's like, well, she comes to mine, so suck it.
Oh, no.
I was like, oh, no.
You're gonna get a call from her parents.
Yeah.
What's this Christmas angel bullshit?
I know.
And what's the lore?
Are we doing this now? What is this? Christmas angel?
And what is an Arbor Day giraffe? Stop telling your kid these things. You're poisoning the well.
Oh, and I was like, just don't tell Nene. That's what she calls my mom, about the Christmas angel. Because then my mom will be like, this is sacrilege. What are you talking about? Anyway, good times being a mom.
So your mother's from New York?
Yeah. That's my New York accent. Thank you. I have worked so hard on it.
It sure is great to be here in Little 5 Points.
Exactly. I love New Jersey.
Where were you from?
I was born in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Oh.
And then we moved to Jakarta, but my family's from Texas and Louisiana.
Nice.
So did they keep the accents in Indonesia?
Yeah, my parents did. You know, I didn't really have one, but my sisters are a lot older. My sisters are like in their late 50s, and I was a surprise baby. But they speak Indonesian. Like, it's very distorted Indonesian. Like, you know, they'll be like, why do lehati to orang?
Oh, God.
Lehati to tao.
Hola, senor.
Uh-huh.
Como está usted?
Me gusta tu queso.
Now we're just doing George W. Bush.
I know.
Doing Spanish.
Do you do a good George Bush?
No, not at all. But it's just, I think he's the sort of classic model of like, buenos dias. Like, it's that southern person.
Yo, me gusta.
Yeah. Always funny when you do a celebrity impersonation in another language. Like, it's instant classic.
That's like a good laugh.
I think that's always a good laugh. And any recognizable celebrity voice that you do, do it in another language, probably Spanish, because the words are somewhat recognizable to Americans.
I think those impression things are always so hard. I used to go in and audition for like Mad TV, which I never got. I
auditioned for that like four or 5 years too. The worst auditions.
Yeah, I went in once.
There were like 3 original characters and 3 impressions. And so then I'm like, geez, Louise. Now I'm like back there working on Barbara Walters, like trying to do my Barbara, or like, I couldn't do anyone. It was always like,
and they just stare at you.
They just stare and they don't laugh all that much.
No.
And you're out there with your shtick.
What were your three characters?
My 3 impressions were, I tried to do Barbara Walters, and I was like, hello, and welcome to the view. Yeah. Which is not that good. It was really bad. And then I did Sean Connery, which they were always like, why would we ever cast you as Sean Connery?
That's genius, though.
But I'm not that good at it. I just like his voice, so I would be like, welcome to the Rock. And then I would say, some things in here don't react too well to bullets. And they'd be like, we have 5 guys that do that way better than you.
But no girls.
But no.
So that makes you the best.
Look, I'd be short. Female Sean Connery.
Shauna Connery.
Tiny Shauna Connery. That would be amazing.
Welcome to the Rock. I freshened up a bit. And just don't even try to do
that. Don't even try. And then I did like Britney Spears, which was just me being Southern and saying obscene things like, look at my vagina.
Sold.
Pretty spot on.
Thank you, Angela. Yeah.
Thank you. I don't think so. We'll be in touch. Oh, God.
That's something we say. We're not going to be.
Yeah, we're never going to call you.
For next year. Next year. And then it said you were a PA on Conan's show?
Yeah.
What the shit?
I know. There are so many of us on the show.
So many of you that were on that show.
Mindy was John, on that show. John. Yeah. Is there someone else? Ellie, I think, even.
So you know what's going to happen is like a bunch of young comedy actors are going to be like, I have to be a PA on the Conan show.
Yeah, that's the way to get on.
If you can't get into the Harvard Lampoon, become a PA on the Conan show.
I was going to be a PA on the Late Show, and then I had to not go because I couldn't afford it.
Oh,
because you don't make any money.
No, and I could not. We couldn't afford to put me in New York. I was like, all right, fine.
I sold my car. and I lived. I had that amount of money to live on in New York.
Nice. Yeah. So you were dedicated.
Yeah.
To doing it.
Car. Jeez. No, I really wanted to.
I don't care how much SeaWorld is paying you. Send me money. Get those fucking dolphins to do 5 shows a day if you have to. I will survive on dolphin money.
Oh, God.
So awesome. Yeah, so I went and I interned, and at that time they had these general interns, and you just were getting everyone coffee. But what you wanted to do is become someone's specific intern. And only 2 interns were in the studio, and that's where I wanted to be. And one was the writer's intern, because he was always like running script changes or joke changes down to Conan. And then there was the music intern. And so the writer's intern was already filled, so I said, I want to be the music intern. And they said, well, what's your music background? I was like, oh, it's extensive. and they didn't ask me any more than that. They didn't know I'd lived in Indonesia and been in this, like, vacuum of information and didn't know anything. And they were like, all right, great. So I became Max Weinberg's intern, and I was, oh my God, like I had to put
the amount of cocaine he did.
But I had to put, like, he was so particular, like his drumsticks, and by his like drums, he had a little pouch thing, and like 2 go pointy up and 2 go pointy down, and the 2 on the left go up and the 2 on the right go down, like all these, like in a towel that went this certain way. And wow. The week I started, Debbie Wonder started.
Oh,
you guys know Debbie.
My friend, Debbie works for us and books a lot of stuff, people on for the Nerdist Network.
So I have this great picture of Debbie and I, like, in our 20s, and that's our first week was both together, and it was like, oh man, how are we gonna do this?
That's awesome.
And so we just sort of like learned that whole scene together. And Debbie, I was like sort of shy, and like I didn't know anyone, and I was just sort of, I didn't have a lot of money either, so I would just sort of stay home a lot. And she was like, you're going out with me, Angela. I'm taking you out. We're going to do a total punk rock night. And I'm like, do I look like punk rock girl? She took me to like Hoboken, and we heard this band. And as we got there, she made me wear earplugs. And she was like, you're going to need these. And then she was like, this guy is awesome. By day, he's a butcher. And at night, he sings. And it was just like, rah, 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 rah.
He's also called the butcher at night.
But and then I remember one time I was in a cab with her, and she was like making out with this guy in the back seat. I was sitting next to them. I was like, Debbie, I think I'm going to stay in next weekend. Thanks.
He's
cooler.
A butcher. Yeah. He's a butcher by day.
Yeah.
She just loves butchers.
She's like, punk rock love, man. He was like, this guy she was dating was an exterminator.
Was it a Dalek?
No, come on. You don't have to be Doctor Who about everything.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
But that was my time at Conan. But I loved it. It was such a cool time.
Did you find that on The Office or any shows that you work on, that you're extra nice to PAs because of what you, because it was your job?
I'm definitely, I think I'm really aware. I try to be, like I had to get everyone's food, and like all the bands, I was in charge of getting them drinks and stuff. And there are a few people that, I run back and at parties I see now. And I remember one dude slamming the door in my face. All I had to say was knock on the door and say, hi, my name's Angela. If there's anything you need while you're here, I can slam. And I was just like, all right, cool. Well, I'll suck it. You don't get water, man. No. Wow. But so you definitely, like, everybody, is just trying to do their best and trying to learn. And, occasionally there's a bunch of idiots that filter through the system.
Sure.
But you just, I do try to be more conscious of all that.
I've discovered kind of what a key element in, like, the people who become dickheads.
Yeah.
Because I definitely, sometimes you do, and maybe you don't feel this way, but I think sometimes the longer you work, the more you feel it pull at you a little bit, mm-hmm. where you just are kind of get a little impatient about dumb things.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with, when you think about what it is that we do, we spend most of our lives not in control of what we're doing. We're completely at the mercy of other people for usually dumb reasons. Like,
right.
Oh, you can't have this job because of this, or go over there. Like, they treat you like cattle. And so you suppress a lot of this kind of control-based rage. And so when you start getting into positions where you have control, I think some of that starts to come out, where you're like, no, I have control now, and this is how it's going to be done, Because for so long, you're just a fucking you're a piece of kelp.
Or you could just not be a dick.
Yeah, no, Jonah, I understand that.
I feel like Jonah has like the three-word sentence of wisdom every once in a while.
It's because I don't know that many words.
Oh, I'm just saying
the ones I know really well.
I'm saying I think I understand, and then, but I think a person with a good heart would go, oh, that's dumb. You shouldn't be that way. And then they would. But some other people, because the business so much reinforces that behavior and lets people just kind of behave however they want, then they just get worse.
I always feel bad when the PAs are like having to do stuff for me. And I like when I hosted a TAC for the week, they asked me my lunch order. And I was like, don't worry about it. And I would just get my own lunch.
You know, at a certain point, though. You have to, so like, if you don't, then you're not going to eat. And that is their job.
Fine. That's fine.
I know what you mean, though. I remember when I was, the first early seasons of The Office, we just had 6 episodes. And we were, like, Kate Flannery and I shared a little tiny trailer, like, together. And it really felt like a team effort. Like, we hope this gets on the air, and we're all working together. And one of the PAs was going to get something for me to eat, and I was like, no, I'll get it. So then I wandered off to try to find the craft service, and then they were looking for me, and then they were like, where were you? And I was like, I was going to get food. And then they turned to him, and they were like, we told you to get
food. Oh, no!
And I was like, oh, no, I just thought I would do it myself, you know? So
you don't have to stick up for him, we know. Yeah. No. You're fired!
But
forever!
Yeah. So in that moment, I was like, oh, there are reasons why they have all this so we run smoothly. Yeah. Like, you know, they don't want me stepping out of the hair and makeup chair to go find what the snack of the day is.
And when your chicken sandwich comes back and it's not on the bread you asked for and it has mayonnaise, you have to make a public display.
Shame.
As an example.
This is coming for a real place.
You're
just happening?
Doing them a favor.
This is for you.
Someday I'll thank you for the lessons he learned.
Bah. Yeah, totally. I do that. I make noise.
Everyone in the office seems pretty cool, though.
They are. Yeah. We all like hang out outside of work, and it's we've become sort of this dysfunctional family on our own. Because I think you end up spending more time with people that you work with than you do at home.
Everyone hangs out, and then over in the corner, BJ Novak stares at everyone.
Lurky BJ in the corner. He's got these big eyes.
By the way, I got a lurky BJ from this girl the other day.
A lurky BJ. It took me a minute. Sorry. And then I got it.
I couldn't help it. I know I went base with that, but I couldn't.
I know.
Well, Joe and I think we're just not going to say it, and then you did.
But no. I love BJ Novak. I've known him since he came to LA. Mm-hmm. And I always, like, half the time I'm like, does he hate my guts?
I know. He is sort of aloof, you know?
You can't tell. You can't tell. I just how this is how he is.
Yeah.
But a totally sweet guy, like, half the time, really, and the other half, like, What did I?
I know.
Did I do something?
It's very odd. I mean, I've known him long enough now that I can call him out on stuff.
Yeah.
But I really like him a lot. But so many times I've been talking to him and I'm mid sentence and he walks away.
Did a really hot girl walk in the room?
No. I just, and then I would say, I've even said to him, like, BJ, did you lose interest in what I was talking about? And he was like, yeah, I think I did. I just thought that, this was a girl conversation. I had sort of checked in with it and responded as much as I could.
You gotta go work on my contract that makes that ancillary character on all the advertising.
He's a robot. That's what an android would do. Yeah. An android would be like, I understood the basic foundation of this conversation and needed to move on to.
I contributed as much as I seemed fair, and I then said retreat. But yeah, so
we had an excellent time. Good day.
Yeah. And the difference is, like, you can be having a conversation like that with Rain, and Rain will stay in it, but he'll be like, you guys talk about nothing. You and Jenna will talk about Lent for 30 minutes. I have Lent. Lent, 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 Lent. And then we're like, okay, thanks, Rain. He likes to tease me, like, whenever I tell stories about Texas, Rain will just, like, sort of erupt into this song he's made up called Cousin Fucker.
Oh, boy.
And he's like, I'm a cousin fucker. Fuck, fuck, cousin, fuck, fuck, fuck. Like that. And he's like, all right, Rain, we get it. You think my family's a bunch of hillbillies.
Save it for the cameras.
Yeah.
Save it for the cameras.
Save it for the good stuff.
How's it been since Steve left?
It was so hard when Steve left because he's such a awesome guy. Like, he is who on Mondays I would always, like, we'd talk about our weekends. But not only that, like, he sort of was like my, I felt like my mentor. Like the first time I was going to do a late night talk show, I was so nervous. And I went up to him and I was like, I'm doing Letterman like tomorrow. Cause I felt like I probably replaced a last minute cancel. I don't know how it went down, but it was very, all of a sudden, like it's on a Thursday. Can you be in New York tomorrow and do Letterman tomorrow? And, Steve was like, just no different than improv. Just be in the moment. Don't try to like be anything, but you know, don't try to create this moment. Just be in the moment. And if something happens, address it. And I was like, okay. But he was always sort of, I felt like, talking me through those kind of things. And I was so sad, but I also felt like it was the right move for him. I think he felt like his character had sort of achieved all of it was going to achieve. Mm-hmm. And then there was this bittersweet goodbye, but also this sort of surge of excitement, because a new beginning, I think, is always exciting. So I'm like, all right, so what is going to happen now? What, when Michael Scott leaves, how will that happen? And how will it affect the characters? And then they brought James Spader in, which could not, like, his energy could not be more different than Steve's energy, but it is delicious. I have to tell you, like, he is just like he would walk on and I would literally be like, because he's just so fun to watch and observe. And his stories are just,
I bet,
freaking crazy.
He was the classic, like, His roles in the 80s is like the classic pretentious teenage douchebag guy.
Yeah.
Oh, what are you doing? You think I'm going to do that? This is just like that sort of, he was so fucking amazing. And you guys had Catherine Tate too.
Oh, and she's still there. And I have like a total like female crush on her.
It is so all about Doctor Who.
As you should. Yeah. Well,
I mean, Catherine Tate.
She's so funny.
Master comedian.
So funny. And she'll, you know, sometimes I'll read some of her dialogue and I'm like, I know if I read that, it would fall so flat. And then she says it and you're just like, ah! She's just like, and she throws so much away too. Like, she doesn't try to make some meal out of this moment. She just will say it and throw it away. So I'm sort of like trying to learn that a little bit from her. Like, I have my old sketch comedy days sometimes come in. I'm like, I got a line. I'm going to take this line and I'm going to do it
big. But when you think about the difference between television and live performance, a live show, you kind of have to blow stuff up a bit, but on television it's a very intimate medium. Yes. So you can throw that stuff away and it catches.
When our pilot episode, I had one line and I said, well, they were going to fire someone. And I go up to Kevin and I say, well, if someone's going to get fired, it'll probably be me. It should be me. Like, my character was having this very pious moment. Like, I'll take one for the team, you know? So it should be me. So Ken Kwapis was directing it, and I said my line, and he goes, all right, I'm like half of that energy, half of that, Ange. And I was like, okay. So I go, if someone's got to go, it should probably be me. It should be me. And he goes, yeah, a little less. And I was like, by the time, I can't really remember what I started at. I didn't think I started that big. But by the time I said the line, I was like, if someone's got to go, it should probably be me. It should be me.
Jesus.
And he was like, there. And I was like, did I ever get it? And Brian and I walked away that day, and he was like, I think we just got fired. Are we fired? Because he kind of had a similar note given to him. So, yeah.
Wow.
Is that sort of did you have to sort of back into that and fight some of those kind of live show urges?
Yeah, I did. I'd been performing at that point. I was doing like three shows a week at Iowa West, and I did have to like sort of learn how I come across on camera and how the slightest thing, camera catches everything. And now, like, I've gone in for auditions and people have told me, like, you know, you can have a little more fun with this, which is their polite way of saying, like, you're sort of talking
more.
Like you're in a coma.
More.
But my character, as she is on the show, is so understated anyway. So I think it's not like my characters like Dwight or some of the bigger, broader characters. My character would rarely comment on something, and when she does, it's sort of very appropriate, you know. So I'm like now going the reverse when I audition for new things.
Does Isabel understand what you do? Does she see it on television?
No, she's been coming to the set since she was 8 weeks old. And so she knows everybody. And, like, she'll, like, Oscar was on TV the other day. And she was like, Mama, there's Akka, and Jenna. And, you know, so, but she doesn't understand what it is other than she knows that she understands we're in the television.
She probably thinks that everyone's mom is in the television.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We went, so our neighbors invited us to Disneyland. And I'd actually never been. I was really excited. I know. I'd never been. And
it's
so
better than the Christmas angel.
I know, right? So we go, and Isabel's really into Tinkerbell right now.
Sure.
So we stood in this line for like 45 minutes just to meet Tinkerbell in Pixie Hollow. And we get up there. And Isabel, you can tell she's like, wait, she's here, but I've seen her in the TV. Oh, my mom does that. My mom is here, but I've seen her in the TV. So Isabel goes to Tinkerbell. So do you act? and the actress, you know, in her very, she's so pretty, you know, this little gal. And she goes, what, do I act? And she goes, yeah, do you act like on the TV? Like my mom, do you act? Because you're here, but you're on the TV. And she goes, but I'm in Pixie Hollow.
and then you had to teach her how to yes and.
Yeah. I was like,
that's a denial.
So, she was like so thrown. And I was just like, yeah, Isabel, let's go, let's go. And Isabel was like wanting to question. She goes, I have a few more questions for her, Mom. Like,
this interview's over.
Yeah, but she does definitely have that. She's starting to, it's weird that you're here, but you're also there kind of thing.
Well, we're at about an hour.
Oh, wow.
Can you believe that?
Oh, flies. My God. No.
Flies by.
Jeez Louise.
I feel like a fun way to end this podcast would be to do a BJ Novak ending.
Okay.
And so you can be on either side of this. Either you can be talking and we'll leave, or I will talk and then you can see what it's like to just leave.
Okay, great. I think I should talk. We're going to do a true classic BJ moment.
Okay.
I should talk, and I'm going to talk about something really ridiculous, like what I bought at Target today, and you guys should walk away.
Okay.
Okay. Ready?
That's my favorite subject.
You know, at Target right now, they have all the Halloween stuff. And if you go over to the dollar bins at Target, you can get these little pumpkins. I thought they'd be really cute to use as decorations and not to trick or treat with, but, you know, to like, I could put like a little arrangement, like potpourri or something. Guys? Hello? There's no one here. I'm going to leave.
Oh, sorry, I just left.
Why did you leave? You didn't like my story?
No.
No? You were done? You contributed all you could?
I was done. I couldn't give anything else. That was awesome. Jonah actually walked out.
He went all the way. He's so tall, that guy.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Hey, listeners, it's Will Arnett. Our podcast, Smartless, has crossed a milestone that seemed unfathomable when we started nearly 4 years ago, as we've just released our 200th episode. Join us as we welcome the dynamic duo of hilarity, Steve Martin and Martin Short. You've seen them on screen together in The Three Amigos, Father of the Bride 1 and 2, and most recently, and only Murders in the Building. Both are comedic geniuses in their own right, but together they are always electric. And this episode of Smartless is no exception. I don't know if I've laughed more in a single episode than this one. We discuss their career arcs both separately and as a comedy team, how they met, who is more difficult to work with, and what motivates them today. Is Steve a better banjo player than Marty as a singer? Find out on this bicentennial episode of Smartless. Follow Smartless in the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you get to hear Sean cry. What a loser!